Hello and welcome once again to canonblogger.com. You are listening to episode number 62. In this week's episode, I'll be talking about the concept of working for free. I'm also going to revisit basic composition, and I'm going to bring on the holiday cheer with a couple holiday events worth noting to you. Lastly, I'll take some listener questions and answers, and I'll leave you with a road tip for the week. So stay tuned because our first segment on working for free is coming up right after this. Welcome back to canonblogger.com. In my first segment, I'm going to be talking about working for free. And this may sound like a kind of ironic thing to be talking about here on the blog, but it came about from a post David Hobby made over on Strobist. You can find his website at strobist.com. If you don't know about Strobist, you should. It's a great website, talks all about lighting. And he brought up the subject of working for free on project-based type work, and it got a lot of attention in the blogosphere from all the various photo bloggers that are out there. And I saw a post about it over on This Week in Photography, as well as on The Online Photographer, and just caught a lot of resources. We're talking about his notion here of how you can work for free and still have it be a good thing. And to his credit, he does make very good points about how it can benefit you, but you do want to be careful about where and when you offer your photography services for free, primarily because if you do offer your services for free, you're certainly not helping yourself down the road long term. And you're also not doing the industry any favors, because that's going to decrease the expectation of costs that people will have on the industry as a whole. So you want to be really careful about where and when you offer your services. A couple of things you really want to keep in mind. The first is to limit the conditions of services. You don't want to give people the impression that this is something you do often or that you do regularly. And you tell them up front, hey, I'm doing this as a one-time deal or on a limited basis. You know, so they know that that's not the expectation to have. And then the other thing you want to do as far as limiting conditions is you want to make sure you retain copyright of your images. You don't want to completely surrender copyright to whoever you're incorporating into your shoot. You want to make sure you retain it, because you never know when you may be able to sell that photo down the road or use it for promotional purposes or whatever other licensing options you have available to you. You really never want to give up complete copyright to your images unless you get something for your time and services. So that's the first thing you want to be careful of when considering working for free. The other thing you really want to be careful of is you want to make sure you get some benefit from that. And I don't say this to sound like I'm being greedy or with the intent of being greedy or get what you got coming to you or anything like that. But there's always ways that you can make sure that you can benefit in some fashion. And even if you are, let's say hypothetically, giving up your images for their entirety, you give up complete copyright for it, you know, there's circumstances under which that may be appropriate. If you're doing something where it's a charity work, where you're donating pictures to a school, or you're donating pictures to a library, or you're doing something of that nature, yes, the donation is all fine and good, but a way you could benefit from that is by getting a mention in the media. Maybe if you're doing work for a school, you could have them mention your photography studio in their school newspaper, and that way you could get possible revenue down the road. You may also want to use that to increase visibility from taglines in the pictures. So if you're selling a work of art inside a library, you could have a little tagline on the frame, photography by Joe Schmo or whatever your name is. Just because there are ways to parlay charitable work towards profitable ventures down the road. There's always ways to do things with a charitable intent and still reap rewards back down the road. And I'm a firm believer in the idea of paying it forward. That's a common phraseology used to give something for nothing. Hey, I've got something, I'm willing to give it away, pay things forward, give back to the community, that kind of thing. But there's always ways that you can parlay that, and you really shouldn't give something up if an opportunity is there. So you really just don't want to completely give away anything, because the truth of the matter is Photographers, just like any other artist, need to make a living. And you can do charity work and you can complete personal projects, but you still want to be looking towards the long term. And that's the bottom line there, because that is a need to be able to put a roof over your head or to put food on the table. And the only, and like I just said, there's only one other instance where you might get some benefit that's not fiscal, and that's on completing a personal project. Say, for example, you've always wanted to take pictures of trains. That's one thing that I've actually been interested in, is capturing trains with steam coming off the sides and their headlights and whatnot. And I may not necessarily get a fiscal reward for it, but I would have one heck of a set of shots in my portfolio if I could ever pull that off. To me, that would be the benefit in that, is completing a personal project. So whether it's completing a personal project or you're putting in some charity work to increase visibility, that's still something you're getting in return. And you always want to be looking out for your own interests, because if, as the old saying goes, if you don't take care of yourself, no one else will. So that's kind of a thing, a theme or an underlying current to this whole concept of working for free that David Hobby proposed. And I'm not trying to demean his post at all. He put a very good post together, and there was a lot of positive feedback on that post that I've seen on other blogs and websites throughout the internets. And it's definitely a worthwhile notion, but this is something that you always want to approach with caution. So working for free is something that's an alternative, especially in a tightening economy. But again, you always want to approach it with caution, whether it be limiting conditions of service, making sure you get some benefit or some return, whether it's notoriety, completing a personal project, getting credit, long-term returns on your investment, things of that nature. So coming up after this, we are going to be revisiting some basic rules of composition. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be right back. To the second segment for CanonBlogger.com's podcast series. In this second segment, I'm going to be revisiting some basic rules of composition here, and this is something that I will be doing from time to time in the podcast, just because it's always good to remind ourselves of some of the fundamentals of photography. We can get all caught up in the post-processing and the photoshopping and all the gear and all the new trends and talking about working for free and things of that nature, but if we don't keep in our minds grounded and our practices grounded in some of the basics of composing photographs, we can often lose sight of that. So regardless of what forte you have or what area of expertise you have, when it comes to photography, there are certain things that you always want to keep in mind. And the first of these, and when it comes to basic composition, is that of the rule of thirds. And for those of you that don't know, the rule of thirds basically means taking your viewer, your lens or whatever you're looking through, whether it be your viewfinder or you're talking about the sensor or whatever, taking that and dividing it into thirds, both horizontally and vertically. So what you would have is a grid on your screen or a grid through your visual eye that looks like a tic-tac-toe board. And the rule of thirds says that where you have intersecting lines, so there will be four points inside your little grid there that you can see in your view, those four points are called hot points, and those are points of interest. And basic composition says that if you want to make a photograph interesting, put your subject on one of those four hot points or one of those points of interest, and that will catch people and that'll grab people much more than something where you have your subject centered or it's way too far to the right or way too far to the left, way too high, way too low. You want to try and put something on one of those points of interest, and that will improve the quality of your composition quite a bit. So just keep in mind the rule of thirds. Some cameras even have the rule of thirds grid where it's pre-programmed, and you can have that show up either on your LCD screen on the back or in your viewfinder. Depending on the make and model, that may or may not be there. But that's one rule that you always want to keep in mind whenever you're going out shooting pictures and capturing the world around you. Another basic rule of composition that you always want to keep in mind is the best lighting to shoot in. And we've all heard about the golden hours, but there it can often be something that you'll forget or you'll not be aware of because you're out in your environment and you may not realize that, hey, it's not the best lighting. If I wait another half an hour or so, or maybe even an hour, I might get some better light. And as a general rule of thumb, and of course this will vary depending on where you are in the world, but as a general rule of thumb, the hour before dawn and the hour after sunset are the two best times of day to get really soft, diffused, golden light, if you will. And the reason why those hours are so excellent in terms of the quality of light is because the sun is no longer directly coming down. You're getting horizontal light rather than vertical light coming down on your subjects. And this can produce just absolutely beautiful imagery. Proof is in the pudding when you look at some of the most well-known shots that you can see from pretty much any area. The sunrises and sunsets are always some of the most breathtaking. And the reason is because they are taken during the golden hours where you can get truly remarkable light qualities. So that is another little basic composition rule to keep in mind when going out and taking pictures. If the quality of light seems kind of harsh or doesn't seem exactly right for you, maybe you might want to wait until tomorrow morning. If it's later or if it's not late enough, wait until sunset or closer towards sunset. Will you get more a better quality of light than you would have during, say, the noontime hour? So that's the second rule of composition that I wanted to talk about today. And the last rule of composition I wanted to take a look at was the idea of focusing on people's eyes. And this is going to hold mostly true when you're doing portrait type work or if you're a wildlife shooter and looking at an animal's face. You always want to make sure the eyes are in focus. And it really doesn't matter if the rest is in focus. It will matter to a certain degree. But if you focus on the eyes, that's what people always look at. So when someone's looking at a picture, whether it's a person or a group of people or a monkey or a seal or a fish or any type of animal or a horse or whatever, any type of animal, any type of living creature, the eye is always what draws your interest. And it's really amazing because studies have been done about what catches people when they look at images repeatedly. And the two things that people will always look at are sources of light and eyes in people's faces. So you want to make sure that the eyes are sharp, because if the eyes aren't sharp, the viewer will wander off. They'll lose interest in your picture. So that's the third rule of composition that I wanted to talk about today. In a nutshell, it's the rule of thirds. Try and compose things so they center on those hot points or those points of interest. Try and shoot during the golden hours if you can. And if you're shooting people or animals, you want to try and make sure the eyes are in focus. So those are the three rules that I'd like to remind you of as you move into this holiday season. So if you're taking family pictures or you're taking portrait sessions or things of that nature, these are things that can help you improve the quality of your images. Coming up next, we'll be talking about a couple holiday items, and I've got a theme for this podcast. It's called Bringing On the Gear. So stay tuned, come right back after the break, and I'll wrap things up. To the final recorded segment for the Canon Blogger podcast series. I said I was going to be talking about the holiday cheer because this might be the last podcast I record before the holidays hit. Christmas is coming up in another week or two. Shortly after that is New Year's, and I will be on the road for a fair part of this doing some traveling. So I wanted to at least get the word out and remind everyone that because this is the holiday season, it really is a joyous time where many of us are visiting family and friends and loved ones that we care about that we don't see that often. And I would encourage everyone to take advantage of the opportunity to really enjoy life. Don't spend all your time on the computer. Don't spend all your time listening to podcasts. Don't spend all your time behind the camera. And actually get out there and socialize with your family, friends, and loved ones. And enjoy whatever season is appropriate for you, whether it's Christmas or Hanukkah, or Kwanzaa, or New Year's, or just the entire holiday season. I am a Christian myself. I'm a Lutheran, so I'm going to say Merry Christmas and God be with all of you. If that's not appropriate, I don't mean to be offensive or anything, but those are my beliefs, and I wanted to share my holiday wishes with the listening audience. So that is the final message for this podcast, with one little kicker, and the kicker is to bring on the gear. I'm happy to announce that I'm actually going to start doing some product reviews. I heard back from a photography company that produces photography products. I'm rather excited about this. This is a new era for Canon Blogger. I hadn't really done much in the way of product reviews before. It's not Canon, so no one get too excited, but it is a photography product, and I was very excited to get that news today, so I wanted to give a little teaser in the podcast saying that I actually will be doing some product reviews coming up here pretty soon. So I'm going to turn it back to the readers, and hopefully I will hear from you. Let me know what kinds of products you want reviewed. The more people I hear from and the more specific you are with the products that you'd like to hear about, the better chance I'll have to actually land a demo version to give you a review so you can make your buying choices based on what I have to say or not, depending on what your preferences are. But I would encourage you to please write into the blog. Feel free to email me, jason@canonblogger.com, or you can visit the website and share something in the comments. There's many ways you can get a hold of me. I will respond to anyone that has a question or a request for a product review, and try to get a demo version in to let you know how the product works, how well it works, and whether or not I could recommend that. So do feel free to let me know. It's very exciting to be moving forward in this venture. I didn't think a day like this would come for the blog, so it's pretty exciting. Coming up right after this, I've got my three listener questions for the week and the final road tip, so stay tuned. Through these listener questions pretty quickly because I am starting to run out of time. The first question I got comes to us from Bill in California. Bill writes in, "Dear Jason, thanks for the podcast and the blogging series. It's a great source of information. I wanted to ask you a question about graphics cards. Could you possibly give some recommendations on what the best graphics card is for displaying colors in Photoshop? Thanks, take care, Bill." Bill, I appreciate the kind words. It's very thoughtful of you to let me know your thoughts on the blog. I do appreciate it. But when it comes to your graphics card, it's really not going to matter too much what graphics card you're using in terms of displaying colors, primarily because if you really are concerned about color inside of Photoshop and working in a color-correct environment, you're going to calibrate whatever video card you have, whether it's your onboard video card or an aftermarket video card. You're going to be calibrating that against your monitor so that your monitor will actually display colors correctly. And it's always the monitor that you're going to be calibrating, not the graphics card. And for that reason, it's really not going to matter which graphics card you use. And then the other reason it's not going to matter which graphics card you use is that Photoshop uses the RAM inside your computer rather than on your graphics card in terms of processing cycles and running actions and running filters and things of that. You use the RAM in your computer, not on your graphics card, because it doesn't do a lot of 3D stuff. That may not be exactly the same in CS4. I don't know. I've not used CS4 yet. But from CS3 back, I know that it uses the RAM inside your computer, and it's also a function of how fast your processor can run queries back and forth. So it's the processor and the computer RAM that will have the biggest impact on your Photoshop speed, and your ability to display colors is a function of your monitor being calibrated. So from those two points of view, it's really not going to matter too much what your graphics card uses or what kind of graphics card you use in your day-to-day operation of Photoshop. So thank you to Bill for writing in with that question. Now, the next question up in our podcast series this week comes to us from Ellen, and she's right here in the state of Colorado. I wish she would have said what part of Colorado she was from. Maybe we could go out shooting sometime, because there's a lot of group photo shoots around here. But her question she wrote in to ask was whether or not backlighting refers to light behind your back or light behind your subjects. Thank you, Ellen, for writing in. This is a really interesting question. I never thought of it that way. I guess there's always a new way to think about things. But backlighting does refer to light that is behind the back of your subjects, light that's coming toward the camera. And what happens when something is backlit is it's referring to things as you see them in camera. So if you ever hear someone talking about on the left side, they're talking about camera left. If they're talking about things on the right side, they're talking about camera right. If they're talking about backlighting, they're referring to light behind your subject. And what a backlight will do is it will produce darker shadows in your subject, and there will be a lot more light behind your subject. And that pretty much will produce a shadow effect, and it's kind of tricky to counterbalance that. You're going to have frontal lighting to offset the shadows that are created if you need to. If your desire is to create hard shadows, backlighting can definitely accomplish that. But that is what backlighting refers to, as light behind the back of your subject, not behind your own back. If the light is behind your own back, that would actually be considered frontal lighting, because it's lighting the front of your subject. So thank you to Ellen for that question. It's a great question. Those are both great questions so far. It shows people are thinking outside the box and looking at photography and Photoshop in new ways. Last question comes to us from Tim in Wisconsin. Tim wrote in to ask whether or not cameras can be affected by shooting in colder temperatures. And the basic answer to that is yes, they can. You can see a decrease in battery performance in colder weather, and it gets to extreme cold situations. You'll notice your batteries will have a shorter lifespan. So you're going to want to plan accordingly if you're going to be out shooting for a long time. A couple other precautionary measures you may want to take if you're shooting in colder temperatures, and that will be transitioning back to a warm environment, whether it's back in your car or back at the house or wherever you end up going. Because as you move from a colder temperature to a warmer temperature, the air will heat up and you'll get condensation. And that's the last thing you really want to have happen to something that is water sensitive. So I recommend three ways to minimize this and to possibly prevent it. The first way is actually to try and stage movement from extreme colds to warmer temperatures. So if you're out shooting and it's extremely cold, don't put the camera directly in your car when you're done. Put it in the trunk of your car, because that will stay a little colder. And as you move back to a warmer temperature, you can stage it. So you can go from extreme cold to the trunk of your car, then possibly to your garage, and then inside your house. And that can decrease the shock of temperature changes, so you don't have as much condensation, if any. The other thing you can do to minimize condensation and transitioning from colder to warmer temperatures is to put your gear in a Ziploc bag. That because the air inside the bag and surrounding your camera will also be transitioning, then there will be less likelihood of the condensation developing in water-sensitive parts of your camera. So that's another method that you can use to minimize possible repercussions of getting gear wet. The last thing I would recommend is, as you do this transitioning, whether it's staging or putting your gear in a Ziploc bag or both, is to also consider removing your batteries and flash media. If you remove your batteries, there's no power source to possibly cause short circuits. And with flash media, it will also mean that hopefully your images will be retained on the memory, rather than susceptible to possible failure from being left inside a camera that gets wet or damaged due to condensation. So those are the three tips this week. I wanted to thank Bill and Ellen and Tim for writing in. There are some more questions sitting in the wings, but that doesn't mean I don't want to hear from you. So if you have questions, comments, or things you'd like to share on the blog, please feel free to email me. Like I said previously, the address is jason@canonblogger.com. Coming back after this, I'll leave you off with a final road tip. So come right back. CannonBlogger.com. And for our final segment, I have a little road tip for you. And this is a Photoshop tip, a Photoshop-specific tip. So if you're not running Photoshop, this may not apply for you. But one of the things that I found very useful inside of Photoshop, if I've got colors that aren't popping the way I want them to, or they seem a little dull in camera going through my post-processing, is that the LAB color space, the lab color space, is a very useful tool if you want to pull out colors. And the way you do that is you go inside of Photoshop and you go under the Edit menu inside of Windows, or you go under the Preferences menu. I think it's the Preferences menu, Mac. You go down to the option that says Convert to Profile. Select that option, and you can select the color space, and you want to pick LAB color space. And once you're in that color space, if you use the A and the B channels of the lightness curves, you can pull. If you pull up a curves layer, you can switch it from lightness to the A channel and the B channel. And on the A and B channel, you can pull your sliders in from the top right and the lower left, and you can pull them in a little bit, and that will increase the saturation or the the saturation or the vividness of your colors. And you want to make sure you do the same thing on both sides, the left and the right side, and you want to do it to the same degree in both A and the B channels. And then once you've done that, you can go ahead and flatten the image, convert it back to your destination color space, whether that's Adobe RGB or sRGB, and print out to your source, whether it be to an actual piece of paper, or if you're outputting to the web, you would want to switch to sRGB color space. But in doing that lab conversion initially and pulling the left and right extremes in on the A and B channel in Curves dialog menu, you can really increase the vibrance. That's what I was looking for, vibrance. You can really increase the vibrance and the vividness and the saturation of your pictures without it looking too overly processed. And it's a great, useful resource to have and to know about if you ever have images that come out looking flat. Highly encourage you to do that. That's pretty much going to be the show for this week, so I want to thank everyone for stopping in and giving it a listen. If anyone does have any questions, comments, feedback, or anything they'd like to share with me on the blog or about the podcast, please feel free to email. As always, the address is jason@cannonblogger.com. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week. Bye.